What is the attraction of the University of Lethbridge? Is that a hotbed of activity in terms of the astrophysics and the infrared area that you're working in?
I'm not sure how well known it is, the gem that the University of Lethbridge really is in the province and in the country. I did an undergrad at the U of A in Edmonton in engineering, and then I came down to the physics department in Lethbridge to do a master's degree at first and then a PhD. And even as I was starting my master's, I didn't fully appreciate all the fine work that was happening at the University of Lethbridge, especially in astrophysics. David Naylor has been here for decades, and he's leading Canada on several space projects and several astrophysics projects, and has really got a great reputation for the university here, and it's a pleasure to be here and work alongside him and with his group and basically build instruments that look up at the stars.
Now, I understand that you have just received a nice big grant from the Canadian Foundation for Innovation. I believe it's over $100,000 to build an instrument. What's the instrument that you're going to build?
Yeah, well, we're very excited to have heard that news. The instrument is called a spectral spatial interferometer. Basically, it's a way to cheat and take better pictures than you could with a single camera by using interference.
Could you explain what an interferometer is?
First off, I'll say that the colors that we're interested in, the frequencies we're interested in, cannot get through the Earth's atmosphere. The clouds and the water and all the molecules there absorb that very preferentially. So we can't really see what's going on from the ground like we can with our eyes in the visible region. So for visible light, we can build big telescopes on the ground, but in the infrared, it's effectively clouds that we see. So we have to go to space. So the Herschel Space Telescope, which I have worked on, was a real breakthrough. It's the largest telescope that you can build in one piece and launch. Anything bigger, you'd actually have to send the pieces up to space and then assemble it once you're out there. And its final orbit was about 10 times farther out than the moon. So that's really not practical to do. So we're basically left with that. And the pictures that Herschel has gotten for us have been amazing, and it's done really groundbreaking science, and it's rewriting astronomy textbooks. But on the same token, the quality of image, the resolution, the details you get on your picture is about the same in the far infrared right now as Galileo's telescope was in the visible 400 years ago. So we're really kind of looking through a keyhole at an amazing window of things in our universe. And the instrument that I'm building, an interferometer, lets us cheat and pretend that we have a much bigger telescope than we actually have. So by using an interference, so basically you have multiple telescopes that are working in parallel, and you combine the signal and it generates an interference pattern, which you then do some analysis on to get a picture out of. That gets you a much bigger telescope than you have. And the same token, we're also looking at the spectra, so we're splitting our signal up into all of its color subcomponents. And that's where the really interesting physics and science happens. If you look at sunlight splitting into a rainbow, you know that all the colors are there. And you can actually use that signal as a signature. So you can tell what molecules are present if you can get something spectra. If you can get a spectra, you can see what temperature things are at. You can learn a lot about what you're looking at. So with the stars, we can't touch them, we can't poke them, we can't put them in a test tube and run experiments on them. We can only look. So if we can get better pictures with more scientific information in them, that's really what we need to go forward and understand the universe around us. And so I'm building an instrument in the lab that we can develop a lot of the techniques and tools that we need to then go forward and build a space project that does this for real with the sky.
Once you get this built, are you going to be using this on the ground, or it does have to go up into space to be used?
Well, the long-term end goal will be to have an instrument that's working from space, but we can use it on the ground. So for an example, water vapor in the infrared is a very tricky thing. If you have too much water, then it absorbs everything and you can't see through it. I mean, the analogy with clouds is very relevant because that's what clouds are made of. So in the lab, the path that our signal travels through is a couple meters. And so it works, and we can do our tests and our diagnostics through the atmosphere. You're changing meters for kilometers, and it's just so much more that it stops working. But I am involved in the teams that are working with NASA and the European Space Agency to make some of these ideas a reality. So there's a program out of NASA. It's called BETTI, B-E-T-T-I-I, which is actually a balloon-borne experiment that's doing similar things. So before you spend all your money on building a series of space instruments, you put some equipment on a balloon and you launch it so it floats above most of the atmosphere, and you get everything figured out. And then you can take those results and move forward and apply for the next instrument. So this is a piece of the puzzle where we can do a lot from the ground in the lab to test the components that you're going to put into space, to test the software that you need to look at your data, and to make sure that you know what signal to look for, how the best way is to make your measurements, and really prepare for building beyond the prototype into the full instrument.
So this is really something that's never been done before, is that right?
Yes, so I just moved from Cardiff, Wales to Canada, and in the lab, sat next to my desk, was a prototype instrument that was the first of its kind in the world to record this type of information. And they published a paper based on those results, and there's really good things happening from there. And we're now working in partnership with the group that I was with in Cardiff, as we have been in Lethbridge for many years. And so we're going to work in parallel and in complement to those efforts to really tackle this problem and get things moving forward.
So as you're trying to build this, what are some of the things that you anticipate or challenges? Like, what is it that you have to work out to get this thing together?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's the nature of research. Some of the answers we expect to find, and then we know that there's going to be questions we didn't expect. With my PhD research I did in Lethbridge, there is a few effects that we found with this similar type of instrument that never really made a big deal before, because the cameras and the detectors and the technology we're working with is that much better than previous generations have been. So there's a problem that if you really looked hard, you could find it. If you knew it was there, turned into a problem that was more evident and actually needing corrected. And so I was able to play a key role in one of those challenges we had with the Herschel Spire calibration. And it's that sort of challenge that we expect with this instrument. So we're going to be going with more sensitive detectors. We'll be having more pixels, bigger arrays. So if you're having difficulties working with 12 pixels, when you step up to thousands, that's going to be a much bigger problem to deal with. So I guess there's a list of things that I'm worried about and I'm going to be looking for. Some of them include fairly technical properties of some of the mirrors and optical lenses and filters that we'll be using. Also, the way you make these measurements, because you're cheating, you're trying to get a bigger telescope than you actually have, you pay for it in terms of how you analyze your data. And you don't just press a button and you get a picture out. You need to do a lot of work and sort out what things are happening from your instrument versus what's happening on the sky, and what signal you trust and what signal is needing to be calibrated. So there's a lot of tricks with perhaps the best order to do your measurements, the amount of and length of measurement you need in terms of, do you spend 1 hour to get a very deep observation, or do you repeat a smaller one several times over to do some averaging? So we're combining a spectrometer, which takes light and splits it up into colors, with an interferometer, which takes a series of telescope images and uses interference to recreate the picture that a bigger telescope would take. So some of the shortcuts you can use if you're only doing spectroscopy have problems when you try to do the interferometry. Likewise, if you're only doing the interferometry, if you're not worried about the spectroscopy aspects, there's some shortcuts that those guys use. And in combining those two technologies, there's some headache that neither side expected. So we're expecting the unexpected, but we have some warning flags as to things that we anticipate.
So how long do you think it might take, and how big will it be in the end?
Well, the goal is actually that, so Herschel just finished its observations. The next telescope in sort of that series or that legacy is called SPICA. It's a Japanese-led mission, and Canada has, through the University of Lethbridge, has a role to play with SPICA. It's actually a bit bigger than our role was with Herschel. And so that's on the horizon. And then after that is this project that this feeds in towards called FIRI, which is Far Infrared Interferometer. So the funding for SPICA is not yet secured. And if it was, if a big check was signed and written tomorrow, it would easily be another decade before it was actually launched. And this is looking to go after that. So we're looking 20 or more years into the future, while at the same time we're involved with the projects that are ongoing right now. We're analyzing data coming from these telescopes and from some of our collaborations. So it's a bit of a juggling act. You need to be involved with the current to know what's happening in the science and in the astrophysics end of things, and you need to be looking forward for the instrumentation to see what's needed. What are the questions that we have today that tomorrow's instruments will answer, and what are the technological challenges that tomorrow's instruments have, so we can work and chip away at those so that the technology will be ready when all the other pieces are lining up. The CRC Canada Research Chair grant I'm on is 5-year term, renewable for another 5, so that's 10 total. The CFI grant, the Canada Foundation for Innovation, it's a one-time grant, so with all the matching and everything put together, that forms just shy of $300,000 worth of research equipment. And that's up front, so I got all these toys to play with, and I get to put them together and do good things with them.
Once this is done, then, how might it be used? Can you give me some examples of how we might benefit from this or how it might be applied?
Yeah, so once this is done, it's ongoing because there's always room for improvements and things like that. But once the main objectives are underway, that will provide some of the ingredients that are really needed on the international recipe to build one of these instruments. So Canada will be in a really good position to be leading the progress for a future space mission. And the main things that's looking to answer are what's happening in experimental astrophysics in the far infrareds. So that's a really key area to learn about what's happening in star formation and stellar evolution, what's happening in pre-stellar regions. Planet formation and exoplanets is a very interesting area of research that we're only now discovering planets outside of our solar system. And once we're able to get more detailed pictures in this region, we'll be able to look and see what's happening, where planets are being formed and what the building blocks are there. And, of course, this stretches all the way to the other end of the universe and that of cosmology, where we're looking at how the universe started up, the first stars and galaxies that formed, what ingredients and conditions do we need there. So there's, because these colors don't get through our atmosphere, the far infrared is somewhat behind the radio. There's very clear windows, and radio astronomy has had a big boost over the last several decades, as has astronomy in general and visible astronomy. And so you need information from the full spectrum, all the way from radio up to visible and ultraviolet and X-ray. And so in that sense, we're looking to answer many questions that are found in astronomy. And specifically, Canada and the University of Lethbridge will have a large role to play in forming these instruments and getting the data out, so the rest of the astronomical community will have numbers to play with and will be able to tell us more about our universe and how stars are made and all these wonderful, amazing things that I can't believe that people are clever enough that we've gone as far as we have, and we know that there's a lot more unanswered questions than we know answers to questions that we currently have.
It sounds like a wonderful project. I hope you make good progress.
Well, thank you very much. I wake up in the mornings and I'm amazed that I'm paid to have so much fun and get to do such interesting things. And it's really amazing to me that we're in a society that supports and values this type of research. And then the other aspect of your question is astronomy. All we can do is look. We can't touch. We can't do experiments in the sense of putting things in test tubes and baking them and freezing them and hitting them with things or whatever. We can only look. And because of that, we need the best technology and the best systems that we can get, and astronomy, then once those advancements are made, that moves on into other areas. Another project that's going on in our research group is we're using some of the same technology to actually look at cancer in medical imaging and some of those areas. The CCD camera that we all have in our smartphones, not too many years ago, the Nobel Prize was given because that was invented for astronomy, because they needed sensitive pixels to look at the sky. And it went a long way from something that was the size of a car and sitting next to a telescope to something that fits in your pocket and you can take pictures of your kids going swimming or on the skating rink or whatever, that's so handheld and portable and part of our lives. So in a general sense, astronomy really has made contributions all over our lives, but we don't set out saying, oh, we're going to build a smartphone by looking at stars. We set out wondering what's happening at the stars, and as a result of the good work that's done, we're able to provide technologies for other areas as well. And so I think that's a really neat synergy that's there.
That's fabulous. Thank you very much, Dr. Spencer.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl. It's a pleasure.